Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 1st, 2014. A South Sudanese government official says the relationship with the United States is very good.
We are also thankful for the invitation of our president to be part of this global summit between the two continents of Africa and United States.
And South Sudanese journalists say the government crackdown on the media is increasing.
On the 6th of this month, Sunday, paper was confiscated despite the fact that we have come out from the printers and we are about to distribute them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The IGAD peace talks for South Sudan have been put off again. IGAD made the announcement today saying that the fifth session of the mediation process for South Sudan will begin on Monday. The talks were supposed to get underway this week, but IGAD says they were delayed because extended holidays of Eid al-Fitr and Mother's Day celebration in Juba prevented government delegates from traveling to Addis Ababa. Negotiators from both sides, along with representatives of political parties, civil society and faith-based organizations, are expected to arrive in Addis on Sunday, a day ahead of the talks. The fifth round of the talks were expected to focus on finding ways to make the cessation of hostility agreement signed in January stick and to hammer out the details of a transitional government for South Sudan. President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar agreed in June to set up a transitional government within 60 days. But the two sides have not met since that agreement was signed, and the deadline for setting up a transitional government of national unity is next week. President Salva Kiir is scheduled to visit the United States next week to attend the U.S.-Africa summit. A minister in President Kiir's office says his country enjoys a good relationship with Washington. Awan Agol says his government is working to address the root causes of the crisis which broke out in mid-December in Juba. He says despite the U.S. sanction on one of South Sudan's army commanders, Juba is still eager to talk with officials in the Obama administration.
We are also thankful for the invitation of our president to be part of this global summit between the two continents of Africa and United States.
Let's look at the U.S.-South Sudan relations. A lot of people around the world look at the United States as the midwife of South Sudan. As a country, they say United States made sure that South Sudan became independent. How has been your relationship been with the United States?
Well, the relationship between South Sudan and the United States of America has been remarkable since the days of the struggle. However, with the incident of December 15, put us back. And we believe that with the efforts of United States and other friendly countries who supported the struggle until we achieved our independence, we felt that we let them down.
Before the December 15 crisis in Juba, some people here in the United States who call themselves friends of South Sudan wrote a letter to President Salva Kiir highlighting issues that they thought should be corrected so that the country moves in the right direction. For instance, issues of human rights abuse, issues of freedom of speech, issues of good governance, and that has still been the case. Are you still being reminded by these friends of South Sudan to correct these issues?
Well, we do not deny that, and that's the reality. So these issues, we know that they are there, and they are our challenges, they are our problems, and we need to overcome these difficulties.
Let me take you back to yesterday. President Salva Kiir was addressing a gathering at the Mother's Day in Juba, and he lashed out at the West for interfering in the affairs of your country. He said they are here because of the resources. It's nothing else. And he gave examples of Iraq, Libya, and Syria. And he said the South Sudanese must understand that the West is not helping the country, but they are just there to get the resources. What is your reaction to that
statement? My reaction, the internal affairs of each country is always a place of respect. We know even in United States or America, where we have the issues of Guantanamo Bay, all these things were not meant for abusing anyone. But it is just for us also as a sovereign nation, we must be respected as a sovereign nation with the laws of the country, even if we do not have some. Then we feel also equal with the other countries in the world. People feel grieved, or the government is being pushed to the wall and things slide out. It may bring some consequences that nobody likes.
That's Awan Gwol, South Sudan's minister in the office of the president. He's in the United States to prepare for President Kiir's visit to the United States next week. He spoke to me in our studio here in Washington yesterday. Luc Paty, a senior researcher at the Danish Institute of International Studies and the author of a book about South Sudan's oil industry, says Mr. Kiir should use this time in the United States to try to patch up relations with Washington. Paty spoke to South Sudan in Focus web editor Carol Zaivogo after hearing Mr. Kiir's Matters Day speech, in which President warned of potential disastrous consequences of foreign intervention in South Sudan.
Mr. Kiir did not name names in his speech on Wednesday, but he cited the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, NATO airstrikes in Libya, and what he said was outside intervention in Syria. At the end of the speech, Mr. Kiir accused Western countries, including the United States, of seeking to gain control of South Sudan's oil. Now, Paty knows a thing or two about oil in South Sudan. He's written a book about it, The New Kings of Crude. He says Kiir's accusations against the United States were off target.
At no point in Sudan or South Sudan's history has U.S. foreign policy sought to control Sudanese oil resources. This wasn't even the case when the U.S. company Chevron was active in Sudan in the 1970s and 80s.
Paty says South Sudan's oil industry is dominated by one foreign player.
China, by far, is the biggest player in South Sudan. Chinese national oil companies have made the largest investments there. China also tends to buy the large majority of South Sudan's oil.
Paty says Mr. Kiir should be trying to woo American and European investors instead of accusing them of trying to grab the country's oil.
American and European firms, particularly specialized oil service companies, can actually help to stabilize South Sudan's decline in production. So I think President Kiir needs to regard the U.S. and China as potential supporters and cooperators in South Sudan's peace process and in South Sudan's development.
Oil provides almost all of the South Sudanese government's revenues, and production has fallen since the country plunged into conflict in December. Paty says he thinks Kiir's condemnation of outside interference in South Sudan's affairs and his accusation that the West is after South Sudan's oil could be an attempt to shift the focus away from the dire situation on the ground in South Sudan.
I mean, it may be a sign of an increasingly desperate president who's looking for scapegoats to explain the chaos and destruction that he and the rebel leader Riek Machar have unleashed on the people of South Sudan over the past 6 months. And let's hope with upcoming peace talks, if they occur, and with the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit coming up in D.C. next week, that South Sudan and the U.S. can patch up deteriorating relations and work together towards ending the civil war.
Talks led by East African Regional Bloc IGAD to end the conflict were supposed to get back up and running on Wednesday, but have been pushed back to next week. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel in Washington.
Human rights organizations today called on South Sudan government to stop harassing nation's media. Activists revealed numerous rights violations they say have been carried out by government agents and violate the country's new media laws. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has more.
The report says over the last 7 months, top government officials have banned journalists from interviewing opposition leaders, and those who do are often harassed or detained by security services. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International say authorities have also restricted reporting on several aspects of the 7 months conflict, as well as debates over federalism. The two-page report says National Security Service agents have not only harassed and detained some journalists, but have also told others to leave the country. Editors of South Sudanese newspapers say some of their editions have been confiscated by security operatives after they published stories on the treatment of journalists by security services. Victor Kariwani, deputy editor-in-chief of the Juba-based Citizen newspaper, is one of them. He says their coverage of the conflict was balanced.
We both take the opponents and the proponents so that the description and their presentation are balanced. But we are surprised one time on the 6th of this month, Sunday, paper was confiscated despite the fact that we have come out from the printers and we are about to distribute, but then it was taken. And the reason later, which boiled to it being confiscated, it was that we published federalism.
Wani has this message for the government.
We in the media are for the people. We are never against our government, and we write what helps the people and the government.
Awan Gual, minister in the office of the president, says the government is working to implement the new media laws. He says security agents who have harassed the media are not taking their orders from the government.
As a country, always we have to have laws that govern each of the sectors. We have media bill that was in the parliament, and it should come into law shortly. With the incidents that happened, they happen not as a policy of the country. You might have a situation that is between a journalist and another person assuming himself or herself as a security agent. And these are things that came to be louder.
Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch say the violations are restricting freedom of expression and curtailing public debate about how to end the conflict. They say Parliament should ensure proper oversight of the National Security Service in accord with international human rights laws and standards. Elizabeth Ashamu Deng, a South Sudanese researcher at Amnesty International, says the government crackdown takes place at a time when South Sudan most needs independent voices to contribute to discussions about how to end the political crisis and internal armed conflict. Deng says abuses by the National Security Service, an institution which is still not governed by any laws, have especially contributed to a growing atmosphere of fear among journalists. And she says the media law defining the role of the National Security Service fails to guarantee basic due process rights for journalists, including the right to counsel or the right to be brought before a judge or tribunal within a certain period of time. Human rights activists say the bill, which was introduced in Parliament last May but never signed into law by President Kiir, must be revised to limit the sweeping powers of the National Security Service, especially regarding the arrest and detention of journalists in South Sudan. Nabil Biagio, VOA News, Washington.
That report was written and prepared by Waki Simon Wudu for VOA in Juba. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says it has less than half the funding needed to help ensure food security in parts of South Sudan. The agency wants to send emergency livelihood kits to farmers, fishers, and pastoralists as the risk of famine grows. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The FAO has appealed for $108 million for its revised crisis response plan, but so far it's received just $42 million. Jeff Shirley is in charge of the agency's Emergency and Rehabilitation Division. He says conflict is complicating the humanitarian crisis.
The situation started off badly in December when the violence started, but in the last 6 weeks, we've seen a very sharp deterioration in the food security situation. More than a third of the population is at level 4 or level 5 in the index that we use to measure food security, and there's a significant risk of an impending food crisis.
The conflict, he says, has taken a severe toll on South Sudan.
Reserves are exhausted, infrastructure has been damaged, assets have been abandoned, agricultural cycles and such has been disrupted, and there's a major problem with access due to the security situation.
The areas hardest hit by fighting between government forces and rebels are Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity States. There are many displaced people there.
You've got camps being set up nearly spontaneously by people where they think they might be able to find some security, but it still involves women going out into the countryside to fetch firewood or for other things that really expose them to significant risk. The other states, the ones that are more calm, those are less impacted. In those cases, we are actually focusing on boosting food production by providing quality seed and planting materials, veterinary services, and things like this.
The FAO's emergency livelihood kits contain seeds, fishing hooks, and what it calls fundamental survival tools. Shirley says the FAO would be able to help many more people if it receives the full $108 million requested.
If we are able to get the additional resources to come up to $108 million, we'll be able to support another 2 million people with these livelihood kits. So far, we're supporting a little over 200,000 vulnerable households. That's about 1,200,000 people. In this case, we've targeted the riverine areas. These areas also are in their rainy period, and access becomes more problematic the longer we go into the period.
The FAO says time is of the essence. The rains could cause floods and further displacement, as well as a greater lack of access for aid groups. And then there's the time it takes to grow crops with the seeds in the emergency kits. Shirley says at least 6 weeks are needed to grow vegetables big enough to eat. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Drinking fluids during hot weather is important for your health. It's best to drink clean water, milk, or fruit juice to avoid dehydration. Drinking alcohol will not help you and can cause problems. Consuming a lot of beer, wine, or other alcoholic beverages can leave a person dehydrated, confused, and susceptible to injury. The signs of dehydration are dry lips and tongue, headache, or even dizziness. If fluids aren't replaced quickly, heat stroke or even heart problems can follow. So make sure you drink a lot of fluids, especially clean water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mariam Ibrahim arrives in the United States. That story is coming up next.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on the events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That is South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What do you like to do with your free time?
In my free time, I like traveling, meeting people, seeing new places. That's what I enjoy doing most.
I like watching movies, listening to the radio, and going out.
I just like watching movies, mostly different movies. Yeah, music. I'm the biggest fan of music. All right? Yeah, that's what I do mostly.
I read novels and watch movies.
Personally, I like listening to music, reading novels, and visiting new places.
Actually, I'm mostly home. I don't like moving around. Yeah, I try to keep myself busy, but yeah, that's what I normally do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Medical charity Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says the cholera outbreak that began in Juba more than 2 months ago has spread to Upper Nile State. MSF says people have died of the preventable disease in the state of Malakal and in the towns of Wawoshilluk. Mugume Devs Rokarinj has this report from Juba.
Nearly 20 people have died of cholera in Upper Nile, MSF says. Teresa Zamkristoval, MSF's emergency coordinator for Upper Nile State, says most of those who died of the disease were from Wawoshilluk, where the majority of the 50,000 residents are displaced persons who fled violence elsewhere in Upper Nile. Zamkristoval says the situation appears to be under control at the moment.
The total death toll is 16 people. Nowadays, we have a very, very strong reduction in the number of cases. And in this moment, we only have one patient inside a cholera treatment center.
Zamkristoval says MSF has been working with the International Red Cross and the government to provide clean water to residents of the area. That has helped to stop the spread of cholera, which is caused by ingesting contaminated food or water. But Zamkristoval says MSF is worried that the disease could see an uptick again because many people have not changed other unsanitary habits, such as defecating in the open. She also says that the rainy season makes it difficult for people who have cholera to get treatment.
In Upper Nile, the situation when it rains, it makes everything extremely difficult for the patients to have mobility, for us to have access to the patients.
A cholera outbreak was first reported in Juba more than 2 months ago. The disease has killed over 100 people in the national capital. Food insecurity in Upper Nile makes the population even more susceptible to infectious diseases such as cholera because their immunities are weak, MSF says. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Rwakarinj in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. I'm Gwen Uten. It's time for your comments. Many of you are expressing your frustration with the stalled peace talks and your concerns about the shape of the next government. Judith Loki Moy of Tarit in eastern Equatoria State says, neither President Salva Kiir nor Riek Machar should be part of the proposed interim government because they are the subjects of today's lesson. Otherwise, South Sudan will remain unstable. Emmanuel Kumba from High Masia in Yambio writes, we South Sudanese are really tired of war. You should think about the young generation and think about development of our country. He asks, for how long are we going to kill each other and when will the war end? Kumba adds, our country is really going downhill. James Manasse in Yambio, Western Equatoria State, says he urges the delegations from the two warring parties to come out with positive results in the next round of peace talks if they are really concerned about the suffering of their own people. If they are not, Manasse warns, God, our Creator, will one day ask you why you did not stop the war. Peter Simon Baringba from Yambio writes, more bloodshed will not resolve the senseless conflict, but will only exacerbate it. My message to both the government and the opposition is they should commit themselves to the peace talks and avoid violating the ceasefire agreement they signed. If they think the war and indiscriminate killing are the solution, the situation will become catastrophic in time to come. Andrew Angelo Messine, also from Yambio, states, we don't like federalism in South Sudan because we don't like tribalism and divisions that will lead to more war and loss of lives in the country in the future. And finally, Cole Philip Quare in Juba says, the decree that President Salva Kiir issued last week to form a Greater Pibor administrative area will lead to divisions and instability in South Sudan. Tribes that occupy more than one county will demand their own administrative areas or states. He continues, the following two questions should be answered first before the Greater Pibor administrative area is formed. One, what would the government do if those who live in communities that exceed one county demand their own administrative area or state? And two, why was David Yao Yao not made to face justice for the massacre he carried out last year in Ajung Payam of Twik East County in Jonglei State, which left more than 80 people dead and more than 60 others injured? We appreciate your comments. Do you have something to say? You can reach us by text or online at South Sudan in Focus at voanews.com. I'm Gwen Uten.
We read listener comments on Fridays. These comments come from you, our listeners, and they reflect the views of the commentator only. The comments do not represent the views of anyone on this program or the Voice of America. A Sudanese woman who refused to recant her Christian faith while facing death sentence in Khartoum is now in the United States. Mariam Ibrahim arrived yesterday in the eastern state of Pennsylvania, where she was welcomed first by the mayor of Philadelphia, who called her a world freedom fighter. Ibrahim was greeted later by cheering supporters waving American flags in New England, state of New Hampshire. Dozens of supporters holding balloons and signs greeted the family at the Manchester airport. Her husband, Daniel Wani, who previously lived in New Hampshire, thanked South Sudanese community in the state on behalf of her family and said he appreciated the outpouring support. Manchester is located about 50 miles north of Boston and has been a magnet for immigrants and refugees for decades. About 500 South Sudanese reside in the city. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The head of the World Health Organization has told the presidents of West African nations stricken by Ebola that the outbreak is moving faster than efforts to control it. WHO's Director General, Dr. Margaret Chan, says if the outbreak continues to worsen, the consequences could be catastrophic in terms of lost lives and socioeconomic disruption. Dr. Chan met today with the presidents of Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Ivory Coast. WHO and the West African leaders are finalizing a $100 million plan to fight the spread of Ebola, which has claimed nearly 730 lives. Uganda's constitutional court has overturned a tough anti-homosexuality law that allows life sentences for those convicted of consensual homosexual acts. The court announced today it had struck down the measure because of procedural technicalities. It said the Anti-Homosexuality Act was unconstitutional because it passed in Parliament without enough members present for a quorum. And finally, a ceasefire in Gaza has collapsed, with dozens dead and both sides blaming the other for the truce's breakdown. The Israeli military says a gunman attacked soldiers destroying border tunnels near the southern town of Rafah about an hour after the U.S. and U.N.-backed ceasefire started today. Two Israeli troops were killed. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Yeah. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Salah by Kebas featuring Trita C. Yeah, let's pray.
Yeah, brother, you should never bother. Anything is possible, salam is possible. No, no more gunshots in the night. No, no more fights, only likes. I shall kill the wallet sharp, K-Bass, massive mic. Fibi Daya, I know young boy, good now, our vision. K-Blue, AK Gen, my man, and the locals is fire. Now me and Trisha say, pray. Jake Terra, pray. My man Evans, pray.
We have been listening to Richard Adeva, also known as Kebas, featuring Trisha C with the song Salah. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be part of this show. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.